96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Wednesday, April 19th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I am here with Aaron Green as we have a Man Down Mashup Wednesday with On The Clock. It's a mashup show where we analyze the news, but we have a topic today. We talking about they paving the paradise and putting up a parking lot to make it pristine, make it organized, to make it say, man, this looks very nice, very foreign, very not Bahamian. And we are actually asking, is this what we want for tourism? Something that is definitely not Bahamian, but it looks darn nice. And the song we was playing earlier, and we can play that shortly when the producer comes back, It says that not only that they paved the paradise and all the trees and everything to put up a pristine parking lot, they even put up a boutique hotel and said, look at that. That's a boutique hotel, man. Of course, that is nice. Mm-hmm. No, they put up high rises and jewelry stores and saying that is nice. That is what it is that Bahamians and tourists want. And I'm saying, no, that ain't what I want. Man, they got going so far, they putting up, what do you place to slide down in the ocean? What do you call it? Theme parks! I say, this is what we need. This is what the Bahamas need because the tourism can't find nothing to do.
Listen, I'm stunned by it, but let me read this definition.
You read that definition for me.
What is a plantation society model in the Caribbean? A society referred to as a plantation society is characterized by the preponderance of agriculture focused on export crops, generally centered on sugarcane, and by a social and power structure directly organized around this dominant activity. Now, I'm gonna read that again, and I'm gonna replace export crops with the word tourism. A society referred to as a plantation society is characterized by the preponderance of commerce focused on tourism, generally centered on tourism, and by a social and power structure directly organized around this dominant activity. I think we could replace export crops with tourism in that. And most importantly, a social and power structure directly organized around this dominant activity. Often I come on the radio and plead on behalf of the Bahamian people that somebody would defend the Bahamian people the same way that tourist workers defend tourism. That staff at the Ministry of Tourism work for tourism. Like Chester Cooper, the Minister for Aviation Investments.
I love Chester.
Focuses on investments and mm-hmm. tourism, mm-hmm. right? That's what the Bahamian people need. Because surely we have prioritized tourism, like, right? Like the whole power and social structures operate around that being the most important thing. How do I know? Taxi drivers don't stop at red lights and stop signs if they don't want to. Mm-hmm. They park up on the sidewalk if they want to. They will obstruct traffic to pick up tourists if they want to. They don't seem to be penalized for it. They don't seem to be chastised by the public around them to say, hey, surely we know that tourism is important in the Bahamas, but should you be frustrating our lives to this extent mm-hmm. to ensure that the tourism product survives? I mean, we got a housing crisis. We just had a story on the news where a woman who was in a government facilitated temporary shelter system was told, look, your time is up. You got to hit the streets. And I don't know what you're going to do, but we've got 6, 7, 8, 9 potential hotel projects online. Talk about them all the time in the papers, right? We got our leading entrepreneur building a hotel, a high-end residential community mm-hmm. while Bahamians are being dragged out of the buses and the makeshift homes they've created for themselves in the need to survive.
Just the other day, we had pictures, unfortunate pictures of a woman and how she lived, right? Mm-hmm. And no one appreciating the point that this is how many Bahamians live as we carve out space.
And we would go as far as to suggest that these people are just nasty, uncivil, dangerous people without first saying, but look at the conditions that these people have been forced to live in. And even if we don't even acknowledge that even people with agency sometimes can't pull it together.
Yes.
You know?
But we go into this call here, but let me read this text. C.A. Naren. Of course we own tourism, because both you and I can open an Airbnb and provide the service. If your definition of owning means servicing and profiting, if 100 Bahamians put together to invest, most likely we can own a even greater portion of tourism in the likes of the Atlantis, and so we can own tourism. I like the word if, by the way.
Right. Go ahead. Because if Toby were a politician, he wouldn't be in this position. We see an example right in front of us in someone who has done that, right?
Yes.
They have found the investors.
Yes.
They've worked on a plan steadily, right? They thought they had a path forward.
Mm-hmm.
And some politics and some foreign investor politics came in the way.
Well,
and everybody said, including me at some point,
mm-hmm.
we can understand the government's desire to prioritize what they think is the larger economic project, right?
That's fine. That's
Boom.
Good.
Like, we get that. Even we said it, that sometimes you may find it justifiable to discriminate against the Bahamian and prioritize a foreign project over Bahamian product, right? We've all said that. So to the texter, I think the point is sound, but it requires us. We're still not there yet because we see Bahamians putting their neck out on a limb and not being supported.
Let's go to the caller. Producer Patrick, call us through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning, CA. Good morning, Aaron.
Morning.
It's always good to hear you.
So, as a former O-level history teacher, it was said that during the heyday of the sugar cane industry, that sugar was king.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there was no other monarch. I mean, that there was nothing at that particular time that were bringing in the fortune, so-called planters.
Mm-hmm.
And thus you had what was called the plantocracy, that is the rule of the planters.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because sugar was, of course, labor-intensive and was very expensive. And so here we see the same process, that in order to really, be successful in the tourism industry, it is, in some regard, could be very labor-intensive and could be very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, are we still on the plantation?
Mm-hmm.
This question, I think, came up, I remember, several years ago, I think, that the Prime Minister, I believe it was Grenada, had said that this industry is a plantation one because it's very extractive. All of the profits, as mm-hmm. was in the days of sugarcane, was being shipped off to the European masters, and nothing was being left in the Caribbean. And so here we have the same situation where these individuals, they come and they bring their big hotels and whatnot, and most of the profits, of course, is shipped off to wherever.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do agree. I mean, I do see that, and I know quite a number of individuals who have been on the plantations and who have been able to move up in the plantations, and who have done very well on the plantation. So tourist industry.
Cole, I want to ask you one question.
Go on.
You ever watched the Django?
The who?
The Django, the movie.
No, the latest one.
And the reason why I asked you that, because you mentioned that there are persons on the plantations who moved up. And on the Django, there was Stephen. Stephen was in charge of everybody. He moved up. And I mentioned that, right? But on the plantation, no matter how much you move up, you don't own the plantation. You're a worker. You're just a glorified worker who turned vice president.
The government at one point in time tried owning hotels. Mm-hmm. And that didn't work out
very
well. I think Butch Stewart and the Sandals brand has been perhaps the best individual of a country or an individual who has really done tourism well.
Mm-hmm.
No one is prepared to step up, and I think I heard this argument, no one is prepared to step up and to put their money where their mouth is in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
There are opportunities, but Bahamians don't want to get into that business. They don't want to get into it. I mean, there have been properties for sale. I believe that Franklin Wilson and them are doing something on one of the islands on a more smaller scale or something like that. But, you know, Bahamians with money have not been prepared to take that risk and to make the Bahamas a brand as a John Issa or a Butch Stewart. Until we can find somebody who is prepared to make that investment, then we will continue to be more or less plantation workers, you know.
So let's respond to
Thank
that.
You.
I appreciate
Thank
it.
You very much, Carla.
Well, let's go to the next caller so we can do that. Go ahead, Carla. Can you hear me? Carla, can you hear me?
Good morning, Sia. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning.
Plantation. The thing is, right, the other caller said that we have Bahamians with money and don't want to put that money towards some of these big hotels and whatnot, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a government that changed the laws that caused the property value to skyrocket out of reach of most Bahamians, then you could expect that. But if you look on the Family Islands, those are Bahamians that are owning those properties and are billing those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where that point is coming from. Here's another thing, though. I don't know if it's Jamaica or Barbados, but we know it's China. Whenever you want to start a business in those countries, there has to be a percentage given to a local or a citizen of that country to be a part of your business. The government can do those things right now with the Toby Smith, because from my understanding, he had the proposals in first. Royal Caribbean came in afterwards and was given the opportunity to start the project or to start something on the project.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the government really was concerned about having Bahamas benefit, why couldn't they say, well, Royal Caribbean, if you really want this property, you have to give a percentage to Toby Smith, 20%, 50%, however it is. But if we talk about ownership, the government is the one that has to put the policy forward or law forward to say that this industry is only for Bahamians, or this industry is for foreigners, but you have to have a Bahamian tie to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way we can get this thing going forward if we're talking about Bahamian ownership. I think that's it.
Thank you.
Thank
you very much. You know, the point that he made about resorts and establishments on the Family Island being Bahamian owned, we get into that. I'd love to explore that and understand how many and how they operate. But
I'm going to bait you. I'm going to bait you on something. But you go ahead so I can bait you.
I wanted to make another point.
Go ahead.
When we had a discussion about the Sovereign Wealth Fund transition, right?
Yes.
We repealed the Sovereign Wealth Fund Act, replaced it with the National Investment Funds Act, right?
Mm-hmm.
We took a look at the fund. The main fund has sub-funds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of those sub-funds is a sort of a land fund, right? Where the government, intends to determine the value of all the crown land and all the land under their purview, right? And determine how they can extract the most value from that land to put back in the fund, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it gives me the sense that you don't think the land is ours. It's not ours. It's yours to make those decisions with. And
yes.
It troubles me. Here's a thing that troubles me, and people have been bringing it up, not necessarily on the show, but I know of dozens of people who are waiting for Crown land. They've been approved over 20 years now. They've been approved, right? And can't get the documents for the land. And I get the sense. And then there's this constant rumor the constant rumor with a capital R-U-M-O-U-R that there are pages missing from the Mayaguana Land Registry and the Grand Bahama Land Registry, right? The question arises, who does the land belong to? Who gets to determine what the use of the land is? Who gets to determine what the limit of value we're going to extract from the land is? Who gets to determine where that extracted value, where those resources or revenue, where they're going to be diverted, how they're going to be used, right? Everything, you know, all of the language that they use, all of the language contained in the legislation suggests that it not only is it our not our place, it's not these are not our decisions to make. Right? And it's perplexing. And I wonder if the government understands how and why the trust deficit keeps increasing. Right? That's the lack of trust. Why it keeps increasing, because you continually tell us, this ain't our place. It's not our decisions to make. But more importantly, that it's our obligation to provide the labor necessary to make your vision successful.
I hear you, Aaron. The conclusion to that is our government understands where we stand in the big plantation. First of all, this is a plantation.
Mm-hmm.
That plantation meaning that the resources is being done for other people. All of the works is being done, extracted to be sent someplace else. That's what it is.
Or to be enjoyed by other people.
Enjoyed by other people. Colonialism in general, right? So when you see we go to the negotiating table or when the foreign investor comes in, we negotiated that we have the labor for you. Right? We just want you to create a room for our labor. Right?
Uh-huh.
Now, then I say that just to make a point and then move to this. One of our best tourism product as an island concept is Harbor Island.
Uh-huh.
Right? The pink sand, mm-hmm. the perfect island, best beach, whatever it is, right? Where the locals provide the labor.
Mm-hmm.
But I put this to you. Who owns the hotels on Harbor Island? And can you and I afford land now in Harbor Island to join in
mm-hmm.
onto this economic boom that Harbor Island is having?
Mm-hmm.
And then I add that to say that we have people on Harbor Island, investors, foreign investors, who just recently, the tax people are saying that they have $1 million worth of...
Hold on, those people weren't Bahamians?
These people are investors, right? They come here, right, saying, man, we appreciate...
The people who owed $1 million are not Bahamians?
They're Bahamians, man. They have the audacity to owe us money too, Aaron. They ducking the taxes.
And they get to pay it back. I get to pay it back.
There's a plant. And thing is, yeah. The things they imported didn't come through our customs and whatever yeah. it is, right? We have people clearly here who are prepared to sell out the rest of us in order for them individual self to get ahead. They have all kind of equipment that came through our waters, shipment point on the dock,
mm-hmm.
right? But they ain't paid not a soul. And we need to find out what it is that we want out of the Bahamas, because there are foreign people here who taking advantage of us.
Yeah.
In front of our eyes, we watching them take advantage of us. Right? And say, man, we're doing you a favor. We're giving you jobs. And because we're giving you jobs, you must be grateful and don't grumble and gripe.
And you know what I tell them?
I give you a job.
I see the palm tree. I see the plantation and I see the palm trees, and about 50% of those palm trees is produced coconut. So I could be okay. Mm-hmm. That's what I would like to tell them. It's a fascinating place to be in. There are so many examples. I mean, we've just really been sort of talking about a plantation, we've just been talking about plantation model tourism, right? But more than that, a plantation.
It's not just tourism, you know.
Right, that's what I'm about to say. It's a system that focuses primarily on tourism,
yes.
right? But I think we've got plantation model political systems, plantation model education systems, and plantation model academic systems, right?
Yes, but I'll give you that because I want you to explain that.
Yeah, yeah.
Even this talk about miracle marijuana. Watch this. Watch what can happen. We know who can get the benefit. In fact, I believe at this current time, a person could get licensed to grow to maintain to use medical marijuana at this present time.
Yeah.
So we have all this big debate saying we could provide opportunity for Bahamians, knowing fully well
the opportunity already exists.
It already exists and people already benefiting from it.
And I mean, I could say this, the legislation is not about liberalizing the law or the market. It's about creating an industry, right? And to create the industry, you got to protect the people who are prepared to take the first step out. But you haven't opened up the conversation to the wider public. And here's the sort of things I mean, right? So, okay, you're going to say, man, Aaron, we got to rely on the people that have the capacity and the resources, right, to create the infrastructure necessary for a proper industry. And that also means that they have the capacity to inspire confidence in foreign investors and partners, right? I get all of that. But I haven't seen an announcement of one course at UB or BTVI that is aimed at empowering and educating skills building around medicinal cannabis processes. I haven't heard one conversation about a tertiary institution in the country offering classes or courses or creating a school to ensure that when the industry unfolds, that we have the talent on the ground, Bahamian and educated to fill the spots required to run the industry. I see we got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller.
Aaron, good morning. Good morning, CA.
Good morning.
You know, this is a very interesting conversation, as usual. And, you know, I must tip my hat off to you guys and say congratulations because, you know, it's conversations like this that really causes persons like myself who is well aware that what this country has to offer, what is on the ground here to be gained, but yet seems to be out of our reach for a number of reasons. It prompts persons like me to lend my voice to the conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some things that you guys said that is so profound. One of those things is that, you know, the legalese, the language and what is being offered to the public, whereas the average Bahamian feels left out. If you don't understand what the legalese is all about, then you're not going to participate. Mm-hmm. And then you have some of the language that actually exempts the average Bahamian from even participating because the bar is set so high that many persons cannot even reach the bar. You know, I believe that the educational aspect is one key component to this whole thing, and that is to become aware and to learn what is being offered out there. But the other part to it is that we have a sensitive government that is quite aware of the capability of its people, the talents and the skill sets that the people have. It don't make any sense having a skills bank when the majority of the people who participate in the skills bank still today have not even been utilized because, you know, of the different complaints or the different issues, whereas, well, you know, we don't have these certain things available, XYZ. So if those certain things aren't available, then a responsible government will go there and create it. Mm-hmm. It isn't that it cannot be used. It's the matter of the application, how it's going to be used. That's how you really elevate your people to be the best that they can be. And I'll close on this one point. The Bahamas, the Bahamian people, we are filled with talent. In fact, we have so much talent here that our country sometimes can't even contain it because you'll find that many of us with no university experience, but because we have skills and technical experience that we have honed on the ground, we are able to leave this country and go into other people's country and establish ourselves, elevate ourselves, be promoted to these different positions that you can't even get in your own country. And I cry shame on this government and every past government. You know, still today, the trend is still the same. We are being undermined. We're being underestimated. We are allowing other people to come into this country to take positions and get positions when our government at the negotiating table should have been able to negotiate for the maximum benefit for every Bahamian first in this country to be hired. But yet, that bar is far short from where it's supposed to be. So we have to be very sensible. We have to be very cognizant. We have to be very truthful to ourselves and call it for what it is. Our governments have not done the Bahamian people at the level that I would have perceived that they should have really advanced us as a people. They have not done sufficient to move us forward. Thanks for taking my call this morning.
I appreciate that call.
Absolutely. Mr. Nuri, a whole bunch of stuff came up for me. I want to thank the caller very much. A whole bunch of stuff came up for me. Mm-hmm. First thing is this, I was reminded, I had a recent conversation, we were talking about challenging the law, right? And yes. I said, look, the Police Act is, people say that the right to protest is a constitutionally guaranteed right, right? You have the right to protest. And I say to them, sure, that's fine. The Police Act, though, restricts that right. And the question is, have you challenged the Police Act as being unconstitutional?
Mm.
Right? Because the Police Act may contain provisions that are unconstitutional, but until you bring it before a court and ask the court to review it, you say, look, I think this is bad law. Right? But until you bring it before the court, the law will stand as good law. Right? Mm-hmm. Here's where the problem comes in. Apparently, it takes $250,000 for judicial review.
All of that? That means they expect that to go nowhere. Nowhere.
Even if it was only $50,000.
Still expensive. It moves the access from the typical common behemoth.
Entirely, right? And even the question of bail, right? In today's Guardian, on the top of the fold, Gonzalez... That's the Prime Minister of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Do Bahamian judges live on Mars? And he is speaking. In fact, let me read. A regional leader asked whether Bahamian judges, quote, live on Mars, close quote, as he questioned how courts could grant bail to people accused of murder. Mm. Let's stick a pin. Right? This is the thing here, because you can't have people in the jail indefinitely. You can't have them for exorbitant amounts of time, right? You can't say, look, but you've been charged with murder, so if it take 10 years to bring you before the court, it take 10 years to bring you before the court. What if the man is innocent?
Mm.
You had him in jail for 10 years, right? There's a balance, though, because I'm on the outside and my loved one has been killed by someone who was on bail for murder, who is on bail for murder after being released, after serving time for murder, before, mm-hmm. possibly, right? And I say, but if the person was not granted bail, maybe my loved one would still be alive, right? There's this duty to protect the wider public. And how do we balance these things? And the question I ask is, why do we grant bail mm-hmm. for murder? Mm-hmm. What is the reason? Is it because the judicial system is falling apart and you can't try people in a reasonable amount of time? Is that what it is? Or is it that lawyers who defend people on charges for murder require a lot of money. And if you're in jail, you can't generate the money required to pay the lawyer. So you got to go out on bail so you could work. See that question, when we talk about a man that has impregnated an underage girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we say, well, how can the man take care of the child, the baby child, and the underage girl, right? How can he provide economically for them both, right? Because it ain't just the child that was born. It's the child that you impregnated. We say, well, the boy got to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
He need to work. That boy need to work. He got two people to take care of, including himself. That's different, right? And so the question of rights is, why do we grant bail for murder? Is it for the benefit of the people as a whole? Is it for the benefit of members of the judicial community, lawyers, not anybody else, lawyers, right? Why? We got to say, who is the law for? Is it for me, the citizen of the country?
I say the Constitution prove extreme, supreme. Let's go to the caller. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear us?
Yes, good morning to you, Nuri, and to you, Mr. Green, C. Allen Johnson, critical thinker.
Morning.
Ms. Green, what prompted me to call is your discussion on the natural resources and its value and its use in the development of the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
Having spoken on this for literally two decades and being aware of well over 100 different natural resources and the need to develop a sovereign fund in the truest sense that simply holds the asset known and unknown, seen and unseen, tangible and intangible for the Bahamian people. What is in front of us is the often referred to as the salt and aragonite and the land. You know, the Bahamas is 3 million acres, of which no one can tell us how much more of it belongs to the sovereign or even though the sovereign cannot be alienated from its land, which will bring us to the immigration problem. I don't want to go there. I just want to talk about the natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to just take, for instance, the land value and assume that we only even have two million acres left, because there's at least two million acres left in the BNT in trust for the Bahamian people. But if you were to just simply take $100,000 of those acres and put into a land trust type environment for the economic development to be included as part of this plantation economy. This is done by hiring a sovereign asset management company. And so essentially, if you have an economic value, if you take the 100,000 acres and put an economic value of $300,000.
You're calling numbers.
No, yeah,
you got to tell me. I can't make up a number.
No,
where did you get that number from?
No, listen to me, please. I'm saying you take 100,000 acres. We have the crown land.
Yeah.
Yes, I go with that. It's the money value I am uneasy with.
No, I'm not taking. No, this is not rocket science.
That's why I question the money value.
No,
it's not rocket science.
I'm saying it just allow me to make the point, and you can question the money value.
I want to get the money value so you can make the point.
No, I'm saying to you, do you have 100,000 acres or not?
Yes.
You do. There's no discussion in that. That's why I didn't
question that part.
Okay, good. I'm saying to you, if we selectively choose the 100,000 acres that has a production value, put it even...
Where did you get that production value from?
No, but all land has production value.
But you can't quantify it.
Yeah, you
can't make up
money.
No, but
some but see,
okay,
let
let's quantify it to $2. That's just the sense you
no,
can make no, up
I'm
numbers.
No, I'm saying to you, no, I can quantify
since
it.
Since you're able to
no,
make up numbers,
no.
let me make up numbers for you. Let's say
$2. No, we don't have to make up numbers. Let's use the land value of the land value of Paradise Island that is being used right now.
Let's use the land value of East Street. You got to pick and choose all these high-end things?
No, you're not choosing high-end things. But see, again, this is what you do, Nuri. If you want to, we can have a discussion, or you just want me to make my point, and then you can talk.
No, I'm just saying that you're making up numbers, and
I'm not making up numbers because you haven't heard the point yet.
Because you can't go further because you're making up numbers to make the point.
But Nui, if I make one or two statements in which you don't have the full context of the conversation,
that's why I stopped you and say where you got the number from.
Let me ask you a question. Let me just ask you a simple question before we go further.
Man.
If I was to give you an acre on the beach right now,
okay,
and you build a hotel on it,
mm-hmm.
What is the production value of that land?
I don't know.
I'm asking you to randomly choose me. I give you on 1 acre of land, I put a 10 unit on it. What is the production value of that land?
I don't know.
The production value is the income that you could derive from the hotel.
And see, without it being assessed, without it being actualized,
I want you to put it at the minimum. Put it at the minimum and you'll get $50 per room per day.
No, see, now you're making up numbers.
I'm not making up numbers. No, you in the Bahamas, you know what a hotel room goes for. You know what a bed and breakfast goes for. I want you to pretend that you can only get $50 a day off a beachfront property on a hotel on the beach in the Bahamas.
I can't continue the conversation with makeup numbers.
It's not makeup numbers.
Where you get the number from?
Business plans are makeup numbers that's supported by evidence, but you wouldn't let me present the evidence.
I wouldn't know where you get the evidence from.
From my experience in business.
Your experience in hotel and land business, that you trying to say?
Yes, yes.
I thought you was a computer guy.
I am.
And you a land person
too? I am a polymath. I am a polymath, meaning I do multiple things.
So you're a land developer and a polymath and a computer guru.
Yep. I'm about as much land developer as all of the people in Parliament. Or maybe I need to go to Parliament for those 5 years for you to respect
that
I'm a
land developer. You got to get elected to go to Parliament. We don't just send people there. You got to convince people
Can I make my point and then you can dismiss
not
it?
Not without where you get the numbers from.
Anyway, I came to what is called a production value based on the reports. I mean, yeah, it is, right? This is what is very, it's funny, right? Whenever we come to what is called substantive issue, you know me.
I know
right?
you.
You know, no, I'm saying to you, I've been speaking on radio and on my thing. I don't say things for saying things, right? For saying things.
But I still
you want me to show you to give you something over the radio, the land value. But if you want to have that discussion, we could dedicate an hour of your show.
So I could
educate you on how you come up with the development value of land.
And I appreciate that.
Okay.
But let's
make
it quick.
Can I make my point?
I'll give you 30 seconds to make it
okay.
quick. Go ahead.
If you take 100,000 acres of it, just in the same way that RCI puts a value of millions of dollars on each of those acres of land that they're about to develop, those 12 acres on it, they put $1 million a year or more of the developmental value of that land, okay? I'm saying if we use the same 100,000 acres and put, just like the foreigners do in this country, put a development value of only 300,000 that we'll make over 10 years. That's 30,000 a year we'll make from each acre. Okay, I want you to then multiply that 300,000 by 100,000 acres, and you will come with a productive value of $30 billion. My point is that when we begin to talk about the aragonite, right, I know you guys believe, like even for the seagrass, that some guy came to the Bahamas, in spite of a video being on my page giving you the exact same quantity they state for the seagrass, that he came and trained a shark to swim across 300 million acres of the Bahamas and documented the shark with a camera on his back, swam around 3 million acres of the Bahamas and documented it in 2 weeks. Okay? I know we believe that before, rather than the reports that I have. But what happens is that we begin to look at the value of these things, sand, aragonite, the cultural sites, the carbon credits, the heritage sites, the blue holes, the stromatolites, and all of these various different things we have in the Bahamas, probably into the trillions of dollars. But whenever we discuss these sovereign wealth fund and these other different things, we never have a discussion in context of, in the same way you ask me where I get the value from, why don't we have a discussion and ask our members of parliament to table and present the values of the things that they have? So how do they manage something they never measured?
And I appreciate all of that. And Aaron, I was expecting to hear that $1 billion. And I said, any minute now they can say it could be a $1 billion thing. We tend to use a lot of $1 billion carefree. Yeah, man. The point we try to make, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who are we creating this Bahamas for? Are we creating this Bahamas for persons who are exploiting what we have here? Mm-hmm. And we have value? Are we paving the paradise for a parking lot? But let's go to this quick caller and then I'll let you respond.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Good morning, caller.
No? Caller's not there?
Caller, I can hear you.
Hello?
Hi.
Morning. How you all doing?
Good, thank you. How you do?
Oh, boy. Thank you so much, so much, so much, Mr. Newry.
Mr. Newry?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You're actually one of the only talk show hosts besides Chicago Lang who challenged the last speaker.
I just want to know where the numbers come from.
Yes, you wanted because he came on, I guess, what I believe in his head, one of the smartest in the Bahamas, more than the expertise.
No, he's not.
But
he's not.
I thank you this morning.
But thank you. Thank you very much, Carla.
Thank you.
Let me continue the conversation with the plantation. Go ahead, Aaron. I'll let you summarize. Did you lots of words too?
Good morning, ma'am. No. I was practicing being a good woman on the plantation.
And
holding my tongue.
I see you doing the math thing, you know, and you carry the one and you divide it by and the square, that's a square root. And that's how you get the $35 billion.
Yeah.
See it there.
Yeah, you see it there.
I see it there.
I don't understand that math. Also, the main thing is that you could give me all the numbers you want in the world. Which world are you going to operate in, and which global system is going to allow you to extract that much that value from it? I see we got another caller, producer. Good morning, caller. I'm good, thanks. How are you? Do me a favor, turn down your radio or the TV in the background.
I don't have a radio on.
All right, is there a TV in the background?
Yeah.
Yeah, turn that down for me.
Okay.
There we go. Good, good.
Okay.
Just talk loud.
Huh?
Just talk loud.
Still loud?
No, you talk loud.
Okay.
The caller?
Caller, we just called a minute ago.
Go ahead. Keep on talking. I hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Delay in the background. Yeah. Call on a different line. I'm sorry.
And hang up the TV or put the TV on mute.
Okay, down now.
Yeah.
Got it off.
Okay.
Okay. I'm quite sure she don't know Sea Island.
Okay.
I had known Seattle from when we was living in Fort Lauderdale. And he was a little dummy then, and he's showing it on today.
Yes, sir.
Okay?
Okay.
So people have to, and believe me, most of them cannot challenge Seattle. I've seen ministers, in fact, we all thought Seattle would have come to the Bahamas and be a candidate in these general elections so he could take the Bahamas to another level. I'm surprised he's not in politics, because that's what we all used to say when we get together mm-hmm. and talking.
We know why he's in
okay?
politics.
So, pardon?
We know why he's in politics.
I don't know why I know they're not going to use him in politics, but no government is going to use him because guess what?
When you hang up, I can tell Aaron.
He's a bit sharper than them.
When you hang up, I can tell Aaron. I can tell Aaron when you hang up.
Thank you, sir.
But Mr. Nui need to... Sometimes, I tried one time to speak, and before I said what I had to say, Mr. Nui just cut me off, and a couple of people had to call him and tell him, apologize. And he did apologize to me. That's why hardly ever call his show anymore.
Mm-hmm. And don't be like that. You
get
called.
We have to listen. You have to listen to people to hear what they have to say before you respond.
That's why I listen
okay?
to you now.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I listen.
Thank you very much, sir.
You want to know why he ain't going in politics, Aaron? Like, want me to say it on air?
Listen, I have very little strength left.
I can say it on air.
Let's not say it on air.
Don't say it on air?
No, let's not say it on air. But this is what I want to say,
okay,
right? C.C. Allen, yeah, he's smart.
He's
52, smart.
Yeah, he's smart.
Aaron Green, smart.
Well, I ain't smart at all.
You smart, boy.
I'm an everyday bloke who know the power of voting. And I know where I can put my vote. And so I know who I'm voting for.
The problem with me is like crazy. I tell you, go spoil your ballot. Why are you just going to vote and they don't care about you anyway? But the point I want to make is this, is that it doesn't matter how smart you are if you are unable to work in the existing systems, right? And for various reasons, people like me, C. Allen, and 52 can't work in the systems. We could talk about it at a later point, but I want to make a larger point, which is this, is that systems are systems. And all of this value that we are imagining we can extract from our natural resources, I wonder what system are you going to operate in that's going to allow you, the Bahamian from a black majority, small island developing state on the corner, on the backside of the United States of America, who is going to allow you to extract that amount of value? This is why I started the show with the idea that the first element of reparations must be the acknowledgement that the systems that derived, enabled, and perpetuated chattel slavery and the transatlantic slave trade still exist today, and to make a commitment to eradicating these systems. The system will always evolve to maintain the advantage of the developed countries. Oh, you want me to read this?
Yeah, man, great.
Oh, okay. My bad. Here we go. Good morning. The government has replaced our former colonial masters and white UBP Bahamian brothers. Their main focus is the tiny portion of revenues that these foreign investors offer them. Once they get that, they are not concerned about anything else, including the Bahamian people. For example, local Airbnb is the perfect opportunity for Bahamians to get a piece of the tourism pie. But what does our government do?
Tax it.
It responds to the lobby of the hotel industry that they are not being treated fairly. They are being disadvantaged by mom who decided that she rent out a room in her house with her curlers on. Right? That's the hotels have lobbied and say, this is unfair. You ain't taxing them the way that you tax us. And we don't think it's fair, even though they are Bahamians and we are foreigners. I haven't finished reading. You want me to finish reading?
Yeah, finish reading.
Make entry into this market hard for Bahamians by taxing them into oblivion, while they, the government, collect its measly room tax from the hotels. The same argument could be made for the cruise ship. Our colonial masters and the UBP lords have been replaced by the government of the Bahamas.
See, that's a damning. That's a damning statement.
Now,
but there's so much truth inside it.
And listen, it is. And I they say the exception is the proof, but I want to give some more proof, right? And I think this is a proof. Let's take it outside of the realm of economics, right? Let's look at plantation model political systems. I'm going to talk about the Independence Secretariat and the 50th anniversary celebrations. I was excited to be a part of this celebration. I was excited to have an opportunity as a host to open up a space for the conversation, right? To share what is happening. And then I was told, if you're so excited, write your ideas down and submit them to the agency. You don't need, just like they tell us, you don't have to see your MP face to face for him to be working, right? You don't need to talk to these people. Just submit your ideas. So look at me after 3 weeks of looking for the names of the winners of the poetry competition for the 50th Independence Celebration. I send an email using the email address provided by the website created by the Independence Secretariat, and I get a message kicked back to me from my Gmail system saying this address cannot be found.
You still vexed over this?
No, I am vexed over the idea that some people in government think that they're going to have a whole 50th Independence celebration and not include the citizens of the Bahamas in the celebration, not in the planning in the celebration, not in the rollout of the celebration, not in the celebration, right? What? They have a telephone number on the website, and when you call the number, it says, this voicemail system you have reached is full. That's it. It doesn't say, welcome to the 50th Independence Secretariat. It doesn't say, welcome to Celebrate Bahamas. It doesn't say, if you are unable to leave a message, please call this number. Nobody picks up ever, right? And so I say, whose country is it? How could a whole political party and administration think that they could celebrate the 50th independence without the citizens of the Bahamas? Why would you think that I have to be a member of your party or a part of your personality cult to be a real participant in national development?
It's like John Canoe. Your job as a Bahamian is to spectate. You won't be all up in the parade. Sit on the bleachers and cheer.
With the tourists. But not with them because they got nicer seats.
Yes, and they get the sauce.
Yeah.
And they take them. But read that text there.
It says, good morning, Mr. Nuri and Ms. Green. I have some numbers for you. I made an inquiry in 2013 to Ocean Key on the cost of aragonite. I was redirected to a secondary site called Weku that reported the cost per metric ton. Weku is W-E-I-K-U, W-E-I-K-U, that reported the cost per metric ton of unprocessed oolithic aragonite was $750. I have that email saved if you require proof.
What I find amusing is the texter.
Uh-huh.
Is writing to external people, the colonizers, to get the price of our tigs. That's the problem.
Where you can find it?
That's my thing. They determine the price. So the text is saying that the foreign people determine the price and the value, and then coming back to us and say, yes, we can follow their value, and we have no value for it.
Mm-hmm.
Let us create a value for it.
Mm-hmm.
Let us tell them the price. And if we are unable to tell the people them the price, then there's no value in it.
Mm-hmm. Let me give you another example. In July 20, oh, we almost out of time. Hey, let's, this is a lovely example,
man,
but maybe
we
want
to. We have 7 minutes, man. We can do wonders in 7 minutes.
Right? Turn left on red. The law was gazetted in July 2019. By 2023, by July 2022, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was only one corner with a sign erected indicating that you could turn left on red as per the requirements of the law.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2023 and nobody is enforcing the law.
They don't care to enforce the law.
I'm going to tell you why I think they don't care to enforce the law.
Because why don't they care?
Because it's become obvious to me that somebody devised and passed the law without talking to the people who are required to enforce it, without talking to the people who are required to engage it, enact it, to put up the signs.
Aaron, I cool with all of that. But since then, the police officer has announced that there is a problem. And since then, nothing has happened. That's a problem.
Yes, but because obviously they're not a part of governance.
I understand the past mistake.
Yeah.
But the idea that since the police officer announced that, yes, there's a problem, there's only one place in the New Providence where you can turn left, not a soul at Ministry of Works has put the initiative saying, hey, in 2 months' time, we'll rectify
it.
We completely lost. We are oblivious. We don't care.
Who can make that directive?
The Prime Minister, like the union.
When he's
the union,
not the Minister of...
When the Prime Minister speak on for all of the ministers, man, when we think the minister say one thing, the Prime Minister come and correct them and say, no, you're wrong. The idea is that the Ministry of Works, who that is? That's Alfred says? He is not doing his job, and the Prime Minister hasn't called him on it to say, hey, man, rectify the thing, man. Put up one or two signs.
We don't know where the problem lies. What if they...
They need to build the signs. That's where the problem lies.
You sure? Because the police said that they think that the better...
Police enforce laws. They don't interpret
laws.
Listen,
that ain't the point. The point is this. That the police said, the people who have to enforce the law said, listen, what we think you should do is put up signs where you should not turn left on red.
Their opinion don't matter. They just need to put the signs up.
So watch this. Imagine now, their opinion don't matter.
None.
What do you think they think of us?
They don't think we matter either. Well, we see that. That's why they stopping you from turning. They see the lying long. They see that we should turn left. And they said, no, you don't turn left.
Listen, I got one more thing to add to the discussion, right? I found this article. It's been in the paper. Davis calls on CARICOM leaders to work together. This is in this week's paper, right? Nassau Guardian. And this is a quote. The need to reduce violent crime has never been more urgent, said Davis. Each year, hundreds of lives are at stake and many more affected by the resulting trauma. This moment of crisis for our region requires a collective response. The impact of violence goes beyond personal loss. As terrible as that is, high levels of sustained violence undermine investor confidence in the region, scare visitors away from tourism-dependent economies, and place a strain on healthcare, educational, and social support systems. If we do not act decisively, our economic prospects will be further eroded by this ongoing wave of violence. I just want to say, Prime Minister, I included the first half of your quote because I don't want anybody to say that I am treating you unfairly. Even with the inclusion of the first half of your quote, right, each year hundreds of lives are at stake and more affected by the resulting trauma, the moment of crisis for our region requires a collective response. I still feel like you put far more emphasis on the impact of the economics in the region. We know it's not putting a strain on the healthcare system, and maybe it is, but it's putting a strain on a healthcare system that is already strained by your dereliction of duty. Not you personally, but you collectively, since you are equal among equals. Education, same thing. Social support system, same thing. And I want to ask these leaders, our Prime Minister included, would not treating us like members of a plantation be the resolution to crime? Is it that people behave this way because they do not belong to the country they are forced to reside in and to build the labor of their blood, sweat, and tears? These are the questions. Is it that corruption is the thing that is driving crime in our region? A lack of inclusion, is that what's driving crime in our region? Or is it a disregard for those who sometimes feel they have been doomed to life on these various plantations? You know, I still wondering, Mr. New, I know we're almost out of time. The last point I want to make is, who in the Ministry of Tourism approved someone coming here to build a hotel called somewhere else?
He cannot see the plantation
through the palm trees.
Good day, everybody. Have a wonderful day.